Good morning, good afternoon, or good evening to everyone listening, and welcome to season one, episode 24 of the Well Read Podcast. I am your host, Megan Bierke, aka The Real Bookish Writer. I am a reader, writer, bookseller, book festival goer, and I am and always have been obsessed with genre fiction. So, for those of you who are new here, episodes consist of two sections, one for reviews of recent books I've read, and the other for the interview portion of the episode. Now, I've read some wonderful books this past week, so let's get to it. The first book I read was The Hemlock Queen by Hannah Witton, which is the second installment in the Nightshade Crown trilogy. The corrupt King August is dead. Prince Bastian has seized the throne and raised Lore, a necromancer and former smuggler, to his right-hand side. Together, they plan to cut out the rot from the heart of the sainted court and help the people of Del'Air. But not everyone is happy with the changes. The nobles are sowing dissent, the Corinthian Empire is beating down their door, and Lore's old allies are pulling away. Even Prince Bastian's changed. No longer the hopeful, rakish, charismatic man Lore knows and loves. Instead, he's reckless, domineering, and cold. And something's been whispering in her ear, a voice, dark and haunting, that's telling her there's more to the story than she knows and more to her power than she can even imagine. A truth buried deep that could change everything. With Bastian's coronation fast approaching and enemies whispering on all sides, Lore must figure out how to protect herself, her prince, and her country before they all come crumbling down and whatever dark power has been creeping through the catacombs is unleashed. I am a massive fan of the series, and the second book did not disappoint. It was just as angsty, dark, and wonderful as the first. We dive deeper into the love triangle between Lore, Bastian, and Gabe, and for the first time in a long time, I'm not sure who I want to end up together. We get more of the gods and their backgrounds in this one, which makes for a great extra layer of tension and romance, and the ending will leave you desperate for the next book. Thank you so much for Orbit for an arc of this. The second book I read was Darker by Four by June C.L. Tan. Ruri has one goal in mind, honing her magic to avenge her mother's death. Yuren is the black sheep of an illustrious family. The world would be at his feet had he been born with magic. Nekai is a reaper serving the fourth king of hell. And when his master disappears, the underworld begins to crumble, and the human world will be next if the king is not found. When an accident causes Ruri's power to transfer to Yuren, everything turns upside down. Without her magic, Ruri has no tool for vengeance. With it, Yuren finally feels like he belongs. That is until Ruri discovers she might hold the key to the missing Death God and strikes a dangerous bargain with another king. As darkness takes over, three paths intersect in the shadows, and three lives bound by fate must rise against destiny before the barrier between worlds falls and all hell breaks loose. Literally. I am obsessed with this book. I loved the world, the characters, and the plot. There are secrets in action and some great romantic angst. And Tan does an incredible job of mixing magic and tradition with a contemporary urban fantasy world. The concept works so well with the Chinese gods and underworld influence, and I am incredibly upset that I have to wait a year for the sequel. Thank you so much, Harper Teen, for the advance copy. The last book I finished was Song of the Six Realms by Judy Eilin. Shuei, a talented young musician, has no past and probably no future. Orphaned at a young age, her kindly poet uncle took her in and arranged for an apprenticeship at one of the most esteemed entertainment houses in the kingdom. She doesn't remember much from before entering the House of Flowing Water, and when her uncle is suddenly killed in a bandit attack, she is devastated to lose her last connection to a life outside of her indentured contract. With no family and no patron, Shuei is facing the possibility of a lifetime of servitude playing the qin for nobles that praise her talent with one breath and sneer at her lowly social status with the next. Then one night, she is unexpectedly called to the garden to put on a private performance for the enigmatic Duke Ming. The young man is strangely kind and awkward for nobility and surprises Shuei further with an irresistible offer. Serve as a musician in residence at his manor for 1 year, and he'll set her free of her indenture. But the Duke's motives become increasingly more suspect when he and Shuei barely survive an attack by a nightmarish monster. And when he whisks her away to his estate, she discovers he's not just some country noble. He's the Duke of Dreams, one of the divine rulers of the celestial realm. There she learns the six realms are on the brink of disaster and incursions by demonic beasts are growing more frequent. The Duke needs Shuei's help to unlock memories from her past that could hold the answers to how to stop the impending war. But first, Shuei will need to survive being the target of every monster and deity in the six realms. I am such a huge fan of Judy's writing and the world she creates, and this book was no exception. The world building in the standalone is insane, and one of the best things about this book. It's so intricate and detailed, and truly a piece of art in and of itself. This book is magical and sweeping, romantic and whimsical. And if you haven't seen a picture of the cover, please go look it up. It is absolutely gorgeous. Thank you so much, Judy, for an advanced manuscript copy. Well, that's it for book review. So let's jump into the interview portion of this episode. My guest today is a young adult and adult contemporary romance writer living in the Philly suburbs with her Alaskan husband and a plethora of animals named after characters in literature. Her books have been included in best of lists by the New York Times, Entertainment Weekly, Cosmopolitan, The Washington Post, Time Magazine, and many more. Before she left the corporate world, she spearheaded diversity, equity, and inclusion initiatives at billion-dollar companies. She has continued her advocacy work by fighting for marginalized authors in publishing. And when she's not writing about people of color experiencing radical joy or teaching about inclusivity, she can be found hitting the books for her PhD in English and social justice. Please welcome Nisha Sharma. Well, welcome, 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 Nisha. I am so excited to talk with you today. How are you doing?
I'm great. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So I know that people listening can't see her office, but I just want to say her office is absolutely gorgeous. The aesthetic, the everything is absolutely beautiful. So it's a wonderful place for you to record. But let's just start off with the question that I start every interview off with. Why did you want to become a writer and how did it happen?
Sure. I don't think there was like a single moment that I knew that I was like, okay, this is what I'm going to do for the rest of my life. Like I fell in love with stories at a very young age. My mom used to take us to the library and I'd like walk out with like 8 books and she'd be like, why are you checking all of that out? And I'm like, oh, this is like, just in case we can't come back sometime in the middle of the week. Like this is for the week. I started writing continuations of like some of my favorite stories. And like, that's when I knew like, okay, this is something that I could do for the rest of my life. And, it wasn't until I read Nora Roberts' Inner Harbor the summer after 7th grade, I had like wandered into the adult fiction section that I was like, oh yeah, like I'm going to write romance. Like this is the kind of stories that I want to write. So like, I guess like it was the summer after 7th grade is probably like the short answer, but there wasn't like a definitive moment that I immediately was like, this is what I was meant to be. It was gradual at first.
So what made you want to like start writing? Because it was that gradual, you know, mm-hmm. thing. It wasn't, I have to become a writer. What made you want to start writing your first book and make you go down that publishing road?
Yeah. So, I mean, like the moment that I knew that I wanted to like publish, I think that's like that's definitely a separate question for sure, because like writing for yourself is a very different experience than writing for an audience. And I think the moment that I was like, oh yeah, I'd want to publish and write romance, is that Nora Roberts moment. I think that that's probably the best categorization of like, oh yeah, like I want other people to feel the way that this book made me feel. And I want to be a part of that journey for them. So 100%. It was early. I think like my awakening was a lot earlier than, you know, a lot of writers.
Now, I know that you love romance, obviously. Mm-hmm. Why did you choose to write adult and young adult? Because you do write both.
Mm-hmm. I do. Yeah. So I had originally started writing adult romance because that's primarily what I read. I had read quite a bit of young adult romance, but like my preference had always been adult romance. I found that like writing stories that had like authentic intimacy experiences was just something that was really important to me. But I had started early, like because I was like writing early, I remember like I would have beta readers that said, your voice is just way too young for these like 28-year-olds. Like you are 19, 20 years old trying to get published and your voice is just not there yet. And so that's when I was like, well, you know, I do enjoy young adult romance. If I have a young, like authorial voice, then maybe writing YA first would be the best way to go. And it ended up being the right move for me.
Now, you are also venturing into fantasy,
With Illusions of Fire, which I'm very, very excited about, which is coming out in February of 2025, and it's a young adult urban romance fantasy novel. So, what made you want to dive into fantasy, and how was that transition?
Yeah, so I mean, funny enough, Illusions of Fire was originally titled The Chosen Warrior, and it was the first book we went out with my agent.
Nice.
Like over 10 years ago, it was the first book.
Wow.
But at that time, the feedback we had gotten, and I still have a lot of those like rejection letters, is there's nothing that exists like this in the market. We have no idea how to place it. So we're going to have to pass. And it wasn't until like, so it's technically not urban fantasy. Like at the time we were pitching it as urban fantasy, but it's low fantasy. So
Okay.
urban fantasy is when the fantasy is like in an urban setting. But this takes place in the Finger Lakes, like in the middle of the woods. So it's technically like low fantasy. So think, you know, vampires and werewolves are paranormal elements, but then you also have like demons and like fantastical creatures and demigods, like, but in a modern day world. So low fantasy. It wasn't until like high fantasy with those elements with South Asian characters started to get published that people were starting to see that there was potential in low fantasy as well. So there was something about accepting South Asian representation in something that was so out of this world that felt more comfortable for publishers than accepting South Asian elements in our world that was just not like digestible to them, which made us very sad. But at the same time, I'm glad that it took 10 years for this book to percolate because it's so different now than it was when I had first written it. And I think it's a stronger book now.
Is it meant to be a series or is it a standalone? I'm interested. Can you say? I don't want to get you in trouble.
Yeah, no. So I like it was purchased as a standalone. And I had originally 10 years ago envisioned it as a five book series. Five book series just don't sell. And so when we had like repackaged it and like I had done all the revisions to resell it, we positioned it as like a book with a potential for more. But like I just finished writing it like 2 weeks ago. And it feels like there's so much more to the story that I need to tell. So we'll see.
You're like, we'll see, we'll see. Well, can you tell us, like, can you give us a little bit of a synopsis for it? Because
Yeah,
now I
sure.
want everyone to know about it.
It's basically the Mahabharata is one of the two epic mythological like stories that come out of South Asian Hindu myth, like Hindu culture and or mythology. And the story kind of explores like what would happen if there were descendants of these demigods today. So think like Percy Jackson meets like Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Nice. I am sold. I'm 100% sold right now. That sounds amazing.
It's like
Yes.
falls somewhere between like me being a millennial and also like me just loving like middle grade and YA stories.
Hey, I'm a millennial too, and that freaking sounds amazing. I love it. Now, your characters, as you kind of mentioned, they are influenced by your own South Asian heritage. And all of your characters, at least the ones that I've read, are South Asian. Why has it been so important for you to write these diverse and inclusive narratives? And how can others kind of help strengthen and support voices like yours and help support
Yeah.
these characters in these books?
I think like the packaged answer that we always talk about when it comes to diversity re and representation is like it's, you know, windows, mirrors, and it is sliding doors. So like mirror is you are writing representation or you're reading representation that is your own. So you are able to like see your place in a world or in a narrative. Like a window is you're able to look at and develop empathy for like the way that other people live their life and experience joy. And then the sliding doors are like, you never thought of yourself as part of a particular community or representation. But once you see it and you see these experiences, you realize how you yourself have the same feelings and like you want to be a part of that community or explore that part of yourself. So, you know, like as a package dancer, that's the like the importance of diversity and representation and diverse representation in fiction. But in addition to that, personally, I feel like it's, you know, living as a South Asian American, living as a member of the diaspora, living in a culture and a community that is still unpackaging a lot of trauma from colonialism, a lot of the times, like, identity is viewed in packages or in boxes or in like specific ledgers. And if you don't fit in one ledger, you fit in another. And so writing South Asian representation that is both similar and different to other South Asian experiences is a way for me to first explore my own identity on the page and kind of have a conversation with things that I want to like talk about and explore. But it's also for like my South Asian readers who may want to see something similar, like see difficult relationships with parents or see difficult relationships with siblings or other community members. But like it's nuanced enough that they're able to kind of find the pockets of, you know, acceptance in those relationships on the page that help them kind of process their experiences in a different way.
I like that. It's a complicated, but it's a good analogy. Mm-hmm. I like that. Now, you also worked for global tech companies for over 10 years in diversity, mm-hmm. equity, and inclusion efforts.
Mm-hmm.
How did your time spent doing that influence your writing and your characters?
I think in a way it's actually like hurt my writing more than it has helped. And the reason why is because like I have this, like I have friends who will sometimes read my books and they'll be like, Nisha, you need to stop like hitting them over the head with the lecture. Like, cause I slide into like this lecture voice, like where my characters start to say, it's so important for us to work together and so important for blah, blah, blah. And like, I have to pare that back a lot because it's like I know how important it is for us to like work for equity, equality, like to present ourselves as like authentic and to like be able to feel safe and belong. Like, I know all those things. I've taught all those things, but you can't teach in a novel, right? Like, these are like living, breathing people who are not like your bullhorn. And so you have to kind of like separate that part of yourself out from the way that these characters have lived experiences that are like the result of a lot of the lessons that you teach.
I like that. I like that. And in addition to you being a writer,
mm-hmm.
you are also a thesis advisor and a professor for a graduate creative writing program, which I think is freaking amazing. I got my master's in kind of creative writing, and I'm telling you, that program helped my writing so much. It's insane how much of a difference like your thesis advisor and professors in these programs can make.
Yeah.
Sorry, I got distracted. but what made you want to teach and kind of share the knowledge you've amassed working in the publishing industry?
I mean, I think part of it, like, I don't feel like an advisor. I feel like a coach, almost like a life coach in a lot of situations. And like, I teach undergrads now, more so than I teach graduate students. But I think the experience helps me become a better person selfishly, in addition to like being able to help others. Like, if I think like I'll answer this in two parts. The first is, I personally, as a writer, would not be where I am today without people who were so generous with their time and their experience and their knowledge, who were open and just so willing to help me through the process of developing my craft and developing my industry you know, savvy business sense. So it, like if as a literary citizen, I can do the same for others, I 100% will. I think the advantage of a program that actually cultivates that kind of work is that you have permission to play. Like if I were to just take mentors under my arm outside of the program, like there's a little bit more teeth to it where people feel like the desperation for success. But in a program like that, it's like it is specifically like you're approaching the mentorship process. Like it is an opportunity to explore and to develop. And so that is invaluable, I think. And then the other part of it is like I learn so much from every student that I encounter. They are just like incredible with like pushing my knowledge and my boundaries about the craft and about the way that you can approach creative writing. And so I think it's like a twofold experience for me.
Yeah, like I mentioned, like on the opposite end of that is someone who was a student. The book that I am finally starting to query, it's been several years, but that book, using that in that program, like you said, it gave me the ability to try things that I wouldn't normally try because, you know, like you said, outside, you're like, okay, I want this to work. I want this done. You know, I want this. I want to query this. I want to publish this immediately. But being able to do that, you know, and you get feedback from so many different people that you wouldn't necessarily talk to or know outside of the program. And it really does, it lets you expand your writing skills and your process really creatively. And it was a kind of a life-changing program for me. So thank you for doing that because it's, those programs are so important for people who are able to do them. And it really does help. So thank you. But I did want to pick your brain a little bit because what are some of the biggest lessons, you know, challenges, advice, et cetera, that you share with your students and that you've learned from your students?
I think the best writers are the best readers. So if you're not reading constantly, it doesn't necessarily have to be your exact genre, but like if you're not reading fiction constantly, then like how are you supposed to know like storytelling skills that, you know, are developing in our industry? How are you supposed to know what audiences are gravitating towards? So all of my students have a massive reading list. One of the other things that I tell students is that a lot of the times, especially in popular fiction, so like I like specifically mentor like, or I work with students who are interested in popular fiction. And so there's an expectation of what they think the reader wants from a character versus what the character should actually be doing based on the story that they're trying to tell. So it's like, stop making the character sound like what you think the readers want. Like start to really think about voice and developing voice. So that's another piece of advice that I give. And then the last advice that I generally share with everyone is that like it's always good to try something once, maybe even twice. And if it doesn't work for you, it doesn't work for you, then you can toss it. But like not everything is going to work for everyone and not everything is going to always work. Like sometimes like you evolve as a person, your process is going to evolve with you.
I wholeheartedly agree with that, but I do want to ask a sub question, I guess. The reading list that you give your students, what are some of your favorite books to put on that list?
I think from a craft perspective, like Story by Robert McKee, it is a screenwriting book, but it is just incredible for plot. Story Genius or Wired for Story by Lisa Cron is also really fantastic. I also encourage Gwen Hayes's Romancing the Beat if you're writing romance. The Emotional Craft of Fiction by Donald Moss is also really good. So I mean there are like a few for like books to read for like the actual like their reading list in their genre. It really depends on what they're writing. Like I had a student who was writing like steampunk, like Gilded Age fiction, and Joanna Shupe made it on that list. I have a student who is working with Filipino mythology. So we looked at books that had Filipino mythology in it. I also encouraged them to read R.F. Kuang because of like the epic nature of the story that they're trying to tell. And then I have a student who is writing like straight rom-coms, and like that list is also just huge. So yeah, it really just depends on what the student wanted to write. Again, right now I work mostly with undergrads, and we're learning research and argument because teaching undergrads is a different beast. And what they're reading right now is about Loving v. Virginia. So that's like very different.
Very different, very, very different. Now, personally, like personal wise, what is some of your favorite? Let me rephrase that. So personally, not, for the classroom, not for, your mentees, what is your favorite? Let's do your top three favorite books of all time. Like if
Oh
you
my
could only choose
gosh.
those for the rest of your life. I didn't put this on the questionnaire, but I totally should have. Because I know that that can be a very difficult question.
Yeah,
You
no.
could only pick three, what would they be?
Oh wow. I don't think I can. I don't think I can. I could probably do by genre, like top three by subgenre.
Let's do romance. Let's do romance.
Well, like it would have to be broken down subgenre. Like if I were to do like top three classics, for romance, I would do Pride and Prejudice. I would do A Suitable Boy and Love Story by Erik Siegel. Like those would be my romance classics. My romance contemporary would be Love Hard by Nalini Singh, The Worst Mistake by Kate Canterbury, and The Fastest Way to Fall by Denise Williams, with special shout out to to Mickey Chambers Shakes It Up, which is like a new addition to that list. Romantic suspense, I have a ton, like trilogy, like Nora Roberts OG trilogy with like the Chesapeake Bay Saga, but that's more nostalgic than it is anything else. It's like that's heavily like influenced by nostalgia. So you have to like narrow that. I can tell you, I can always recommend books that are my favorite. Like dark romance, like Nikki Sloan is on that list, like mafia romance. Katie Robert was my first mafia romance author.
Nice.
Yeah, so I mean I just tell me which space and then I can give you a top three, but like romance in general is way too hard.
Honestly, I'm very impressed though that you could pull that many books off the top of your head. Because with me, like I'm a bookseller. And so when I'm at work, people will ask me, okay, well, hey, can you recommend such and such, this kind of book? And my
Yeah.
brain, like I read, I think last year I read like 180 books last year. And honestly, my brain just stops working. And I'm
Yeah.
like, I got to get out my Goodreads or my StoryGraph or whatever and look because otherwise I can't freaking remember. So I'm very, very impressed that you actually had all those books on the top of your head. I'm very impressed with that. Now, speaking of romance and romance series, your current one, If Shakespeare Was an Auntie, they are books influenced by Shakespearean comedies. Dating Dr. Dill, which is the first one, is a feminist take on Taming of the Shrew. Book two, Tastes Like, is it Shakar?
Chucker, yeah.
Shocker. Okay. I didn't know how to say that. Tastes Like Shocker is inspired by Much Ado About Nothing and the upcoming book, book three, Marriage and Mosty. Did I say that right? Okay. Is Twelfth Night inspired? So as someone who was an ex-theater kid, I was a theater kid for many, many, many years. You know, I went to school in Ashland, Oregon, where the Shakespeare Festival is. So I love Shakespeare. Why Shakespeare and why these three specific plays?
Well, I've always enjoyed Shakespeare. I've always thought it translates very interestingly through a South Asian experience. And those particular plays, first of all, are freaking hilarious. And the second of all, I think they have the most commonality in terms of like conflicts that still resonate today with South Asian experiences. So I really loved that. And I was like, you know, I can see this so clearly as like a South Asian love story slash like the tropes that, you know, that exist within the romances, like within the plays. Like I can see them just appear so clearly with South Asian characters.
I like that. What's your favorite Shakespearean play?
Oh, Much Ado About Nothing. That was by far like I used to be able to like be a one woman show and just recite the whole play. I loved it so
Nice.
much. I would sit and watch the Kenneth Branagh version with Denzel Washington and Keanu Reeves, and I would just sit and like as they're acting it out, like I would be like mouthing their lines with them because I loved it so much.
That's fantastic. So, what about that play do you love so much?
I think what I love about it the most is that the two characters that are the most interesting characters are technically not the central romance, which was always fascinating to me. I love that you get every single type of character on the page. Like you have a villain, you have just like a good hero, you have a bad boy hero. You have the smart ass heroine. You have the heroine that is like just the sweet character. You have a doting father. You have like the cocky yet funny uncle. Like you have everyone on the page. And it is just a disaster, but also so funny at the same time. And it's like they like make sexy jokes. There's like the like a masquerade. Like there is literally everything you could ask for. So,
That's very true,
yeah.
honestly. And now I think I understand a little bit more why I love that play so much, because you're absolutely right. It really does have a little bit of everything in it. I need to rewatch that movie, or I need to reread the play. That's a good
It's
one. It
great.
really is. Okay, so let us transition to our closing questions. So if you could only pick one, not a subgenre, but just a regular general genre, what is your favorite genre to read?
I mean, romance.
Romance. Now, if you had to pick a subgenre, what would you pick?
In romance?
Yeah.
I don't know. I read a lot of paranormal romance, like a lot. Like last year's. Like, I think it was 45% of the books that I read was paranormal.
Nice.
I would say it's a tie between paranormal and contemporary.
Contemporary. What was your favorite paranormal romance that you read last year?
Ooh, that one is hard. I mean, anything by Nalini Singh, like, is generally just takes the top spot.
She's fantastic.
I would say I think Allegiance of No. What was the one that just came out? Oh, Resonance Surge. That's the
I
one.
haven't read that. That's a good one.
That's a good one. I love it because the bears are back. And so when she does bear shifters, it's just adorable and sexy.
You're like, I love it.
I love Bear Shifters. But like, I'm waiting for like, I love the way that Nalini Singh does Bear Shifters. Like, when you read Bear Shifters in KU, a lot of the KU Bear Shifters are like cozy shifter romances because it's like, oh, bears ca like are cuddly. And so, like, let's do this as like a cozy show. So, like, someone owns a damn coffee shop and like a bear will come in and like accidentally break a table and oh, whoops, they fall in love. No. Like, I want like a terrorizing bear, yet who's also cuddly.
You gotta have both. You gotta have both. You can't have one or the other. You gotta have
Exactly.
both of it. Oh my God. That's amazing. That's freaking hilarious. You gotta have both. Oh my God. That's fantastic. Now, if you could write one trope that you haven't written already, what would it be?
Shifter romances.
Shifter romances. Would it
Oh,
be a
yeah.
bear shifter? Or would you go
I,
a
do you know
different route?
what? I don't know. I think wolf shifter, bear shifter, like the only shifters that I wouldn't do is like what's her name has written. Oh my gosh. The honey badgers. Is
Oh
that
my God.
which one is that? It's not Patricia Briggs, right?
Oh my God. I know exactly what book you're talking about. I can't remember.
Oh, Shelley Lornstein, that's what it is. Or Lornston. It's Shelley
Yes,
Lorn.
it's the blue book.
Yeah, it's Hot and Badgered, the Badger in a Badger Way, Born to Be Badger.
That's fantastic.
That's the one thing I'm like, you know what? Shelley, you can have those.
You, girl, you can have them.
You can have those.
You can have those. I appreciate that. I appreciate the honesty. Excuse me. Now, what are you currently reading, and what is on your TBR list next?
Oh my gosh, I just finished Butcher and Blackbird on audio by Lucy Rivers and Joe Arden, and it is a duet. It's A-list voice actors in romance, and they're just phenomenal. Like, if you listen to the trigger warnings, it sets the tone for this like serial killer rom-com. It's so good.
That's fantastic because I don't have any triggers. Okay, I do have one, but it's animal stuff. But like other than that, I don't have any triggers. Nothing bothers me. So I may have to check that one out. You said it's Butcher and Blackbird?
Oh yeah.
That's
But
fantastic.
yeah, I just finished that one. I finished a romantic suspense by Annika Hope, called The Bequest, that I had gotten from like Stuff for Kindle Day. And I actually enjoyed that one. I was a little like, I was not really sold on some of like the military representation. I like actually, it made me uncomfortable, but like, so I don't know if I recommend that for everyone. But I enjoy like espionage, like, because part of my undergrad was in like Cold War, like spy thrillers. I don't know how that happened, but it did. And so it had like that kind of espionage in it, which I thought was really interesting. Like where the code is like written on like some sort of like secret thing that they have to find. So I like those, like I like those parts of the story. I also have on my like next to read. I'm sorry, I finished Nana Kumar's Say You'll Be Mine again. I blurbed it a long time ago, but when the book came out, I bought a copy to support Nana Kumar, and that is my best friend's wedding, like with South Asian characters. It's so good, highly recommend. And another South Asian author that I read that has a book coming out. Let me just make sure I got the title. Sorry, one second. Oh, another book that I have on my TBR that I'm about to get to that comes out this year is called The Curious Secrets of Yesterday. It's by a friend of mine, Namrata Patel, and it's about a spice shop in Salem, Massachusetts. And so really, really awesome.
What was that one
And
called?
it's called The Curious Secrets of Yesterday.
That sounds amazing.
Yeah. It's more women's fiction. There is like a romance in it, but it's very much like an identity story, and it's a legacy story because it spans
Cool.
two generations. So, which is really, really like if anyone could do it, Namrata Patel could do it.
That sounds fantastic. I'm gonna have to look into that one. Now, what is the most valuable piece of advice you've ever received in regards to your writing?
Trust your reader. Do not feel the need to overexplain every single moment. Trust your reader to read between the lines, to follow along, to like keep up with the characters. That is the best advice I've ever received.
I like that advice because it's so hard. There's such a difference between what you know as the author and what your reader needs to know. And that's something that, you learn a lot of the time just through trial and error. But that's a very, very good piece of advice for anyone who is a writer, because it's very true. If you weren't an author and you couldn't do anything with publishing, experience didn't matter, money didn't matter, nothing like that mattered, what would you do for work?
I think I would do what I did when I wasn't writing, which was advocate for marginalized communities in different workspaces. I was not, I mean, not to toot my own horn, but I was not only good at it, but like I was super passionate about it. And I would like, I will fight for you if you gave me the chance.
No, that's fantastic. And that's not tooting your own horn. Like, there's a way you say, look, I was good at this. I enjoyed this. I know that I made a difference. And that's fantastic that you did. How come you left? If you
I
don't mind me
couldn't
asking.
keep up with it. And like the work is exhausting work. Like there's a reason why the turnover is so high in DE&I because it's I don't know if you're a Trekkie person, but like the Kobayashi Maru. So it's like the
A
test,
no-win situation. Yeah.
it's no-win situation. And so DE&I in workplaces is a no-win situation until the entire system changes. And it's not, because currently it is benefiting the people in power. And so what you do is you just fight valiantly until your death, essentially. And it's a terrible way of looking at it, but it's the honest to God truth, which is why there's so much burnout in DE&I. So I was burning out and I was writing 3 books a year. And so I just could not carry both. And so, I was having health problems, and my husband and I were just like, listen, like if you had to choose one passion over another, what would it be? And writing has always been my number one passion. And I felt like I could do the support my marginalized readers, and I could make an impact that way more than I could have working within a system that I didn't believe in. So it just made sense for me to leave and to write full time. I took a massive pay cut because publishing doesn't pay you nearly as much as corporate does. But at the same
Yeah.
time, like there's like the price for happiness is unlimited. So, I definitely feel a lot better.
Good. Good. Now, if you could invite any person over for dinner, dead or alive, who would it be?
I'm so lucky to have had the opportunity to meet so many of the people that I admire and love. And I'm afraid if I like invited like a family member who has passed over for dinner, I just like feel grief all over again for having to watch them go. And I don't think I could kind of go through that. And I'm afraid of like meeting idols that I have not met yet because like sometimes like they actually end up like disappointing you. So I would say a fictional character that I would love to meet.
Yeah, that's my next one. It's fictional. Who would you invite?
I would say like if I had to meet like a fictional character, it would probably be oh my gosh. I like totally lost my train of thought.
You're good.
Oh, it would be Lucas Hunter from Slave to Sensation by Nalini Singh.
Why him?
Why not Lucas Hunter? is the question one of the reigning alphas of a shifter pack on the West Coast? One of the most powerful men in all of the world? Are you kidding me? Why not Lucas Hunter?
Why not? That's the ultimate question. Why not? That's fantastic. Now, where is a place that you haven't visited that you would like to, both domestically and internationally?
My husband and I have been planning this like RV trip through the national parks for
Nice.
years now. It just hasn't worked out with work because we want to do it in like two, we want to do like 2 to 3 weeks. So domestically, that's what it would be. The other like I want to call it domestic, but it's like it is still an 8 or 9 hour drive to like get to the starting point. But we wanted to do the Rocky Mountaineer, which is the glass top train that goes from Toronto to Banff.
Nice.
So that was like another thing that we were thinking about. It's so freaking expensive, but it's supposed to be the most beautiful experience ever. An international trip we would like to take. I have yet to meet my husband's extended family. So we want to go to South India, but the last time we were in India was for our wedding, which was in 2019, and then COVID happened. And COVID is still happening, and it's now they're a lot older, and it's a little bit more scary to kind of go over there and potentially like put them at risk after traveling. So we need a chunk of time to do it, and that's another thing that we just haven't had a chance to do yet. So if I would like to go someplace internationally, I would say go to visit my husband's family in South India. We travel quite a bit. So like we have a couple places that are on our like to-do list. Like this year, we're going to Scotland because my dad wants to golf 70 at 70 on St. Andrews. So we're taking him for his
Nice.
birthday. And we're going to see the Northern Lights next year. We are probably going to go to Africa at some point. And Spain. So like we travel a lot. So these are like all on the list.
Well, those all sound amazing, and I hope you get to do the train ride, and I hope you get to go see meet his family.
Yeah.
That would be exciting. Now, last question. What currently brings you joy?
Oh my gosh. So many things. I've really like it's really hard for me to like focus on the now because I'm a Taurus. It's really just it's difficult because I have such like a intense personality. And I'm learning to like really appreciate that intensity. Before I used to be really ashamed of it, but now I'm like super like whatever, fine, it is what it is. What currently is bringing me joy is I got a makeup fridge. It
Nice for like your
is
things. That's awesome.
yeah, so it is the bougiest thing I've ever done, but when I tell you I put my moisturizer on in the morning and it is ice cold. It is the most delicious, decadent feeling. I cannot even describe to you how amazing it feels. And then I also have like one of those ridiculous ice rollers, and it is so like unnecessary. But when my eyes are sore at the end of the night, and I just like they're puffy and sore after staring at a screen for like 14 hours. And I use that ice roller, like, I feel like all of my problems can be solved in that one moment.
That's fantastic. And okay, I'm glad you said that because I've actually been thinking about doing that because my eyes get puffy and they hurt a lot as well.
Yeah.
And okay, I've seen a lot of people talking about the benefits of, in the morning putting like your face in cold water and doing that. So I think there's
Yeah.
some benefit, but
Yeah.
I appreciate the bouginess. I like that.
It was like I got a bunch of gift cards for Christmas and I was like, "You know what? I'm doing it. I'm old and I do not care." So that is what happened.
Good for you. And okay, people really rag on gifting people gift cards, but like I would rather have a gift card and use it towards something that I
Yeah.
know I really want or need, than it's something where like I'm very thankful that they got
Oh
me a
yeah.
gift. They didn't have to, but you know what I mean. So you can't go wrong with gift cards. I'm sorry,
Yeah.
but you can. You really can't.
100%. I'm so with you.
Well, that's fantastic. Well, if I ever get a fridge, I may slide into your DMs and be like, Nisha, which fridge did you get? I need to know. Like, I need to know the bougiest, like best little fridge to get. So
I'm happy to share it with you.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much, Nisha, for being here. I am beyond honored to talk with you. Congratulations on your upcoming books. I know you have several coming out, and just thank you so much. I'm so excited. Thank you.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, that's it for this episode. I hope you enjoyed it. And before I sign off, I just wanted to say thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to tune in. If you want to stay up to date on episodes and announcements, please subscribe or follow me at The Real Bookish Writer or at The Well Read Podcast on Instagram. Thank you again for listening and have a magical day. See you next week.